Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's lovely to have you back with us again for another great episode. And this time around, we've got a listener question to talk about. But before we do that, I'd like to have a quick chat with my two lovely co-hosts over there in Melbourne, Dave and Kate. How are you two going?
Going pretty well, Pete. The restrictions are slowly easing, which is good. And spring's certainly in the air with a bit of warmer weather. So, yeah, you can start to hopefully see the finish line as vaccination numbers go up and up.
Excellent. So talking about the finish line, it's the end of a season there, Dave. Kate, you might want to close your ears there for a little while.
Yeah. We all enjoy the long weekend.
Thin ice. Very thin ice.
Yeah, in Victoria. Much needed, I'm sure, for most people. We certainly enjoyed the 3 days off. Really enjoyed our grand final day, to be honest. Surely we can talk about football one day.
Oh, give me a break. It was my birthday as well.
That's right. Happy birthday, Kate. Did you?
Yeah, happy birthday. Happy 21st, Kate. Yeah. Thank you.
Did you have a great day?
No, bloody footy ruined it.
Come on. So, Kate, how are you?
Well, it's funny Dave says it's the end of the season. I'm well, Pete, and it feels like it's the start of our professional season. You know, everything's opened up. We've got this late spring, you know, crazy rush. It's very, very busy, and we're not able to bid in person at auctions, but we've got one-on-one inspections and bidding on Zoom. And I've pretty much had a scheduled Zoom auction almost every day. It's been really busy. I had a Monday night one. Today we had one scheduled at 11:30, which I managed to nab last night prior to auction. But yeah, the agents are getting creative, and you can see that they're managing their diaries, and we've got midweek and Sunday auctions scheduled. So yeah, busy times.
I can see it here in Adelaide too. So we went to see a property on Saturday. And one of the reasons it caught my eye, because it seemed to be so cheap, but obviously lots of other people thought it was cheap, because we drive up to the place and couldn't even find a park. Ooh. So we had to go all the way down the street, and then we had to line up to get in. Not, I mean, for COVID, yes, but in South Australia, I don't think we have a limit how many people can be in the house. You just have to wear a mask. Yeah. So we had to line up. Agent contacts me 24 hours later. He's already had 12 offers.
12.
Oh, my God. I did a lot of work. I mean, I'm sure many of the people listening go through the same thing. You do all of this work, and in the end you miss out, you know, and then you have to do the whole thing again. You have to do the whole thing again, then again, then again. But anyway.
You need a good advocate.
Yeah, that's what I do. I do. But anyway, that's part of the game, isn't it? You know, you're not going to win every one, so yeah, you just have to, you know, keep going, keep plugging away.
Yep, good point, Pete. You know, I would say welcome to my world, because, you know, for all the ones I get excited about telling you guys I've just nabbed, we have a lot of misses too. And you go through all of that due diligence and calling council and contract reviews and building inspections and, you know, the money, the emotional energy, the mental energy, all the ones that you've said no to while you're waiting for this particular one, you know, they're the things that buyers face.
Yeah. But I try and look on the positive side. I actually learned something. Like, there was an easement on the property. I was looking at it from a development perspective, and there was an easement on the property. And originally I thought, oh, bugger, you know, that's going to harm us. But when I did some further investigation, I discovered that there was no water infrastructure. So it was to our water body, SA Water. So then I made inquiries. I could find out you can extinguish the easement, which means that you could develop. So I thought, oh, beauty, you know, if I get it, well, I can go down that path. But I didn't get it. So it just goes to show, you know, you're never too old to learn. And just because there's an easement there, you can do some further investigation, and maybe that particular body that has the easement doesn't need it anymore.
That's a really good point. Here. For the number of easements that we come across that can be deal breakers, whether they're deal breakers for someone who has intent to develop the land or whether it's a deal breaker because it's built, you've got something built over it. So you've got this illegal structure or this thing that, you know, the future owner is worried about from a compliance and a liability point of view. Sometimes when we drill into it and find out what the easement actually is, it is something that's disused and it might have been shelved. And as you said, you can then eliminate that easement off the title plan, and that can be a game changer for someone.
Oh, huge. Yeah. Increase the value as well, increase the potential. Yeah.
So for our listeners, Kate, how would they go about eliminating an easement?
So the first thing you do is you get a legal review with your contract, and a good solid legal review will always talk about the encumbrances on the land. And in Victoria, we also like to order a council certificate and a water certificate. So not just the rates notice that is the minimum requirement in the contract of sale, but those two certificates. You have to order them unless the solicitor acting for the vendor has already ordered them and included them, but they come at a little bit of a cost. Usually it's a couple of $100 for an array of certificates. And on those certificates, you'll see the exact nature of the easement or the encumbrance. So you'll know whether it's sewer or whether it's drainage. And sometimes it is something that has been superseded. It might be old drainage or old sewer. And if it's no longer in use, that's when you can get it taken away. And you can do that yourself through council if you know what you're doing, but typically your legal rep will help you. And you'd be surprised just how many do get dissolved. I've had quite a few.
Yeah, great little tip.
Good question, Dave.
So before we get into our listener question, have you two got a market update? Because I've got a quick one.
So my market update is actually hinging around one of the headlines I heard on ABC News this morning, and it's a burning issue. It's about labour shortage, and we've got some pretty scary predictions and stats, more projections really, and the idea of having a shortage of trade skills is a real problem for us. So we're talking builders, we're talking project managers, and we're looking at having over 100,000 vacant jobs in the next 2 years in the sector that we really need tradies and project managers to be working in. And that will have a flow-on effect because we've got a lot on stream from a state and federal government level, but also new builds. And so construction costs are something that we need to keep an eye on, and that will most likely influence purchasing decisions going forward as well, because as we know, supply and demand dictates a lot of purchase decisions. So that's my market update. Dave, you're nodding, so I'm guessing I've pinched yours.
Not pinching, but yeah, Dom Perrottet yesterday, we're recording this on the 13th of October, said that we need 2 million new migrants entering the country over the next 5 years for essentially all the same reasons and more. So yeah, there's certainly going to be a big push for that to be reopening pretty quickly, which we've been talking about for a while, haven't we? How that's going to produce another fillip for the property market once those international borders do reopen. So that's why I was nodding.
Well, cool. Well, that's going to be very interesting because my market update, perfect segue, thanks for that, Kate, is SQM have come out with some data on vacancy rates and how low they are. So if we're going to have on average 400,000 people moving to Australia every year for the next 5 years, that's just going to make it worse. So what we've got, generally, the vacancy rate is what percentage of properties are vacant at the moment, rental properties, and generally 2% is seen as equilibrium. And we've got Hobart at 0.5, Darwin at 0.6, Adelaide 0.6, Perth 0.6, Canberra 0.8, and Brisbane 1.4, all well below where it should be for equilibrium. Sydney 2.7, Melbourne 3.5. I would imagine that's a lot to do with the vacant CBD apartments. But you can imagine what pressure that's going to put. So all that overseas migration, what pressure that is going to put on an already existing tight rental market.
It's scary stuff.
Mm.
Enter the investor.
Yes. Or either that or government can get back into supplying housing. You know, take your pick or a mix of both.
Yeah.
But they've all got to live somewhere. They've all got to live somewhere.
Bit of an issue with our trade shortage. It is a problem that we're staring at, and it's going to become a more burning issue.
Yeah, it plays on people's minds. I think people are actually choosing to put off and delay renovating because of that challenge and also the impost that then has on the cost to complete them.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. I talked to someone on Saturday and they were contemplating, do we extend and remodel our house or do we just buy what we want? And the builder they chatted to said, why don't you just buy what you want? Because wait list for someone like me is, you know, X months or years. Mm. And that is a problem. It's influencing purchase decisions out there. Dave, your market update.
I'm happy for my market update to be tacked onto the end of yours about immigration, Kate. So that can do for me today.
Awesome.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Well, that probably leads us in very well to our listener question, is from an investment purchase perspective, any hints or tips that the trio have learnt along the way, other than the big one, which is just get invested in the first place? Dave, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so look, we thought we'd just pair this question back from our listener and start at the start. So one of the first questions we'll ask anyone who's looking at a property plan or purchasing an investment property is, do they plan to purchase a future home? And if so, when? Because often what we find is people haven't properly factored in the future home into the investment pathway. So they haven't actually considered how purchasing this investment property today may actually negatively impact their ability to purchase a future home. Now, that might be they haven't purchased their first home or it might be the upgrade. So that's actually it might be counterintuitive. It might sound, hang on, you're not even talking about my investment property yet. From my 20-plus years of experience, it's not actually selecting poor assets, although that costs a lot of people money, that costs people the most money. It's actually not forward planning their portfolio and having to have sold some, if not all, the property or properties they purchased to get into the family home is often, you know, the biggest killer of wealth. So that's actually one of the first question we'd probably ask and unpack with our listener. Now, our listener isn't here on the podcast with us, so we don't know the answer. That'd be the first line of conversation we would be having at Property Planning Australia.
So, Kate, do you have any comments about what Dave just said or any of your own tips so far as our listener question is concerned?
Yeah, I do. And I love how we've segmented this question. We do what we do best. We take a little grain and like smash it up into lots of minuscule grains and then we chat about all the little grains. So today we're going to talk about the imperative decisions around strategy, and we might get a chance to talk about planning, the metrics and, you know, the finance and the structure. And a lot of my tips relate to, you know, location and suburb and things to physically look for, which we'll cover in another episode. So back to the planning phase, I do want to expand on what Dave said. I think it's really important for people to identify when they're making a move into property, are they buying a home or are they buying an investment? And as soon as you allow shades of grey to get into it, you make it really hard for yourself. And I have so many people saying, we want to buy a home, but, you know, investment principles and which are the best areas and what are the things that I should. And I just say, stop. What do you need? Where do you want to live? Because if you're trying to overlay investment principles on a home purchase, you might wind up with something that you don't love. And life's too short to have something that you're living in that you don't love. Now, if it's an investment and you want to live in it to, you know, get the concession for the first year or because you've already determined that it's going to be a stepping stone. So near enough's good enough, a 7 out of 10 for your own personal needs, but a 10 out of 10 for investment and you're going to live in it for 2 years, then you've made that decision and your sacrifice is that you're living in a 7 out of 10 for 2 years rather than getting your 10 out of 10. But I think it's really important that we're honest with ourselves up front. It's home or it's investment. It's not, it can't be shades of grey.
Yeah, I agree. Make that decision straight away, and then you can move on.
Yeah, Dave, you taught me a lot about this. You've really circled in on why getting the family home can be a great move for some buyers. Not for everyone, but for a lot of people, and there's such an inherent value to be placed on that when the strategy is right.
The biggest thing is for us to help people open their eyes up to this consideration, because most people haven't. And it's not for us to ever say to our clients what's right or wrong. It's just to help them look a few more years down the track and just have a plan and understand those implications of if they do purchase now, how that might impact their ability to purchase a home. And although people have these grand intentions often to, you know, buy a property every year or every 2 or 3 years, you know, there's a reason 9 out of 10 people retire owning one property or no properties. It's bloody hard to do to be a multi-property owner, and most Australians will end up prioritising the family home. And so, you know, just making sure you have a picture around that, because you could end up putting all this effort into buying this investment property and then have to sell it, or have to have purchased two and have to sell them to get into the family home. And if you haven't been able to hold it for, we talk about 7 to 10 years, you might have been lucky in terms of those doubling of the property cycles, which happened to Hobart in 2002, 2005, but you might purchase in a period where it's been flat or negative for 10 years as well, and it's very costly. So that's why we unpack that. It's not ultimately for us to tell people what's right or wrong, but it's to educate them so they're empowered to make the decision that's right for them.
Excellent. Dave, any other tips for our listener?
Well, look, I guess, you know, let's say we've had that conversation and they're really clear, it's a pure investment. They might already own their long-term home, or they might be not planning to purchase the home for another 7 to 10 years, let's say, potentially. We now need to obviously unpack, what is your price range, you know, that you're comfortable to purchase within? So the first thing to do is make sure you're really clear on your cash flow and your living expenses. So most people aren't certain around their living expenses, so we would always recommend people to actually go back and review their expenses over the last 12 months, because you'll find often if they just look at a couple months, and obviously times have been different during COVID as well. If you've been in lockdowns, most people haven't spent as much. So you want to make sure you actually understand what your living expenses have been and are likely to be post the purchase. Usually through that process, people will also discover some areas they can cut back in. Most people will tend to get into a property or properties will be willing to curtail some area of their living expenses to purchase the long-term home, or in this case, set up for their financial future to create their ideal lifestyle down the track. They'll be willing to cut back on some costs. So really making sure you're clear on your living expenses and your cash flow is the next step, because that is then what is required to accurately determine what they can afford. And then that should drive your price range, not what a lender tells you your borrowing capacity is.
Very good point. Very good point. Kate?
Dave worked out, he made a point that working out your borrowing capacity and how much you want to spend is the next step. I see a lot of mistakes that are made, and, you know, this question was any hints or tips that we've learned along the way. When you look for a bargain, you know, everyone feels good about a bargain. I know how that feels. You come home with your second pair of shoes, half price, it feels great. But when it comes to property, getting a bargain purchase for an A-grade property is really exciting, but it doesn't happen often, and certainly not in a balanced market. And I think hunting for a bargain at the expense of quality is one of the biggest mistakes I've seen people make. And, you know, in my early years, I was guilty of that too. So you don't have to spend everything that you've got on hand, but you should be prepared to spend what you comfortably can for a really great asset. Because when you're looking at how much you can save by buying something that is much lower priced, if you don't understand the reason why it's lower priced, you're flying blind and you are potentially buying a dud. Not necessarily, but potentially. I always say to someone, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. So we have to turn over every stone to find out if that bargain price property is compromised. If it's not, happy days. That's the most fantastic, exciting thing under the sun. But if it is compromised, you want to know what the compromise is, whether it's zoning, you know, an invisible compromise, as we were talking about earlier, Pete, easements where you don't want them. It might be compromised because it's in a bad spot that won't have owner-occupier appeal if it comes time to sell. They're the things that we need to understand.
Yeah. Very good point, said Kate. Very good points. Yeah, Dave?
Yeah. So, you know, on a bargain, you know, often, if not nearly every time with our clients, we'll talk to them about, you know, if they understand what quality property looks like through our education and that incorporates a quality location, then don't expect to buy a bargain because you're just going to end up chasing your tail, particularly in a market as strong as now. And so there's a lot of, I guess, at the end of the day, mindset work that you do with your clients, reminding them that you've got to be willing to pay more than anyone else to buy a property. And if the market's going up, there's no point coming second or fifth, you know, or not even being in the race for 10 properties. And in the meantime, you know, if the property market has moved another 5 or 10%, you've cost yourself $50,000 or $100,000. So, you know, really understanding you need to put your best foot forward. And if you understand what a quality property looks like, well, it's a quality property for a reason. Other people are going to want to buy it. So you need to be willing to pay more than anyone else. Quality property and bargain very rarely, if ever, come together in the same sentence.
Especially if it's in a top quality area. Yeah, like Kate said, you are less likely to find bargains in top quality areas. They're often in the outer ring suburbs where people get into financial distress. Yeah. So, Dave, I know one of your other tips is asking people to make explicit what their financial goal for the property is. You want to talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so getting clarity on what's your financial goal for the property obviously will help drive the location selection and the asset type selection. So are you focused on capital growth because you've got a long timeline through to retirement so you can afford to have a lower rental yield? Are you looking for more of a balanced approach? You want to have a bit more rental return, and often that will mean a slight compromise on the potential for the capital growth, or are you purely looking to get the greatest rental return you can from the property? Your goal for the financial return or focus of the property is going to play a part in selecting the location and dwelling.
Very good. Kate, anything to add there?
Yeah, who's got the dog?
I don't know, not me.
It's my neighbour's dog.
All right.
Case of wine for them and a little mention that on Wednesday morning, doggy needs to be inside with a pig's ear.
Might have
to. I love it. The joys of recording from home. I do have a little bit to add to that. You know, you've made a point, Dave, what is your financial goal for the property? And I think first and foremost, when you're thinking through this question, I like to take people to the end of the journey, which is your debt retirement strategy. You know, what's the end game? What is your end game? And like you said, there's no right or wrong, but recognizing what you're choosing is really important. Because if your end game is buy and hold and sell them all, pay them all down so that you retire with your full portfolio intact and you've got a rental income then to supplement your retirement funds, then you've got to make a decision about property selection that enables you to pay them all down. So you have to project what your repayments look like, you know, what the debt you're carrying looks like, what your income and expenses and obligations are, so that you don't get to age 60 and you've still got 15 years worth of loans to pay down, if that's your decision. If your decision is to get to retirement age and then sell some or sell all, well, then you can make some capital growth decisions. But if you haven't answered that fundamental question at the start, you could be picking the wrong types of property, because everyone who's been listening to this show knows that I don't think there's a right or a wrong when it comes to the balance of rental yielding versus capital growth assets. On a linear scale with each at one end, there's shades of grey in the middle. You've got to pick the shade of grey that works for your debt retirement strategy. And if you're on, you know, $1 million a year and you've got another 25 years of work in front of you, well, then you can start making some really aggressive capital growth purchases and probably be confident that you'll pay them down. But if you're not earning megabucks and you've got aspirations to have lots of properties and you want to retain them all, you've got to think about how much debt you're carrying, what sorts of properties you're going to go for.
Yeah. And there's a few points there. So what you're just saying there, Kate, that intersects with ultimately the price range that you're comfortable with will be determined by your financial position and your income. One of the things we'll work through our clients with is, okay, we're clear on your current cash flow. What would you like your surplus cash flow to be after the purchase? And how much money would you like to have as a buffer after the purchase? Because really, that's what we triangulate back to determine their price point. And then we see if that fits in with what a lender will lend them. Because what we're comfortable with financially is personal. People have different risk profiles and they're at different stages of life. So ultimately, you know, your position post the purchase that you're comfortable with should drive your price range. And ultimately, your price range and your desire for the financial return of the property drives the location, which we're coming to the location. And as we touched on, that might be our next episode.
I think this is such a meaty topic here. We're going to be talking about that next week. Yep.
Yeah. Just to touch on another one of your points there, Kate, you know, one of the things we ask our clients to set or work with them to set is a goal for retirement for rental income. And so then you can work backwards and work out, okay, in today's dollars, how much in investment properties do you need to own? And so that also factors into the property choice that you're making today. So, you know, off the top of my head, there's a client we're working with at the moment who wants $60,000 of rental income. So $2 million of property at 3%, yield would be $60,000. So, and they already own a property worth 1.2 that is an investment. So therefore, potentially, we only need to purchase one more $800,000 property for them to achieve their rental goal, as long as they can then, you know, to your point there, pay off that debt between now and retirement and get to that, you know, so your rental income goal for retirement plays into the number of properties you purchase, that, you know, the price points of the properties you purchase as well. So there are a number of things to consider, and before you even get to selecting the location and the dwelling type. But all these factors that we're discussing ultimately then play a role in determining the location that is right for you.
As we said, we're going to talk about location and dwelling type next week, but we got one more tip, I reckon, Dave, from you, which is about mortgage strategy and pre-approval.
There's a number of things to consider around your mortgage strategy, and I'm sure we don't have enough time to touch on them all, but I'll just be quick. So, you know, if it's an investment property, you want to understand how you're optimizing your tax deductions through this investment. Do you have non-deductible debt? Because you want to be directing as much of your cash flow towards reducing your non-deductible debt. So therefore, you probably should be paying interest only. If this listener has equity in a home, well, then you should be looking to borrow the whole purchase price plus costs. So you're keeping your existing savings to going towards offsetting the interest payable on your home if you already have non-deductible debt. If you're buying an investment property and then plan to purchase a home in the future, you still need to be mindful of that because you want to be building up your savings to go towards that home you're going to buy in the future. So even then you should be thinking about, well, what's the minimum I need to put into this property so I can keep the rest of the money aside for my future home? Should I be paying interest only so I'm still building up my savings towards going towards that future home? And this is allowing, also optimizing my ability to keep this property when I purchase this future home, because what, like we talked about it early on, a lot of people end up having to sell the actual investment properties or property they've purchased when they get into that home. So you want to plan for giving yourself the best chance not to have to sell it. There are a number of the things that feed into your mortgage strategy and how you structure your mortgage.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Dave. Kate, anything else to add before we go to our gold nuggets?
I'm saving mine for gold nugget.
Very good. Very good. All right, Kate and Dave, thank you very much. But more particularly, thank you very much to that listener who sent in that question. And we do plan to address many more listener questions in future episodes. Part two for hints and tips that the trio have learnt along the way, we will continue with next week. Dave and Kate, thinking caps on, please, for your gold nuggets.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
So, Kate, what's your gold nugget?
My gold nugget is for everyone who has done this pre-planning that we've just been talking about, and they've set on their journey based on a strategy that's suited to them, whether it be capital growth investing or a blend or going for rental yielding. And also, as Dave mentioned, their mortgage setup, allowing them to have flexibility to roll out the rest of their plans through their working life. The worst thing that you can do is make a good informed decision and then listen to other people who weren't part of your journey strategy program. So you might be at a barbecue or you're seeing someone who has a perceived portfolio that's outperforming yours. You need to remember that you had a tailored set of decisions and a tailored portfolio strategy for your intents and purposes. And they might be getting more capital growth or they might be retiring earlier. They have a different strategy to you. And the biggest mistakes I see people make are unraveling something that they put a lot of good thought into because they've got green-eyed monster.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Kate. Dave?
So we've led up to being able to get really clear on the price point, the goal from the property, and how that's going to meet your retirement goals. So the next step is to then select the macro location. So let's say city and or state. So a few things to consider there is, okay, do you have an existing portfolio? So is diversification a consideration? Should you look at purchasing in a city or a state that you don't already own property within? Have you purchased property in either of the two major capital cities, which historically have outperformed over the last few decades, Melbourne or Sydney? Do you have any land tax considerations because you own so much property in one state that it's actually eating into your yield? That potentially could factor in looking at a different state. And also, are there any property cycle considerations for you to consider? There's some of the factors to consider when it comes to selecting what we would call the macro location, so the capital city or the state, to purchase in. Before we, in next week's episode, we actually break down how to select the suburb and the property type and what to look for there, which is probably what our listener was really looking for when they asked the question.
I think we've done it in the right order, formulating the plan.
I think so. You've got to get the big picture first, and then we get down to the knickknacks. Excellent. All right. So, Dave and Kate, thank you very much for your time today, and looking forward to part two for hints or tips that we have learnt along the way. So have a good week and look forward to catching up with you next week.
Can't wait.
See you next week.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about selecting a location for investment, you can listen to the following episodes as well. Episode 8, Interpreting Data to Uncover an Outstanding Property and Location and How to Sort the Gold from the Lies, Damn Lies and Statistics. Episode 14, How to Choose a Location for Investment, What to Look for and What to Avoid. Episode 21, Why Price Points Should Determine Location and Strategy. And also Episode 36, Buying the Wrong Property and or in the Wrong Location, which is number 6 of the 7 critical mistakes.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist.